Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to On Point. I'm Don Allen with my co-host over in Studio A, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards, broadcasting live from the McIntosh Studio in downtown Minneapolis. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing today?
Good afternoon, Mr. Allen. Happy to be with you again on a rainy and overcast day here in the Twin Cities. A lot of storms, not necessarily all volatile, but certainly a lot of rain and et cetera, if you will. Probably good. It certainly has caused a greening, if you will, of the local countryside. So we need it, though certainly some in the southern part of the United States have had more than their fill of quote-unquote water, if you will. Don, quick update. We just got off with our international partners, if you will, and it looks like that the nation of Greece, the oldest quote-unquote democracy in the Caucasian world, is on the verge of economic collapse, if you will.
Oh, wow.
There have been riots going on in Athens, the capital city of Greece, for the last 3 or 4 days. Actually, there's been instability and turbulence in Greece for the last 6 months. That country of 11 million seeing some real tough economic times. And it appears that that certainly the European Union is being asked to bail Greece out. The only problem is that they're in the process of bailing out Portugal, Ireland, and now Spain is in trouble. Is in big trouble. And the Germans, if you will, and some of the northern Scandinavian partners, particularly Sweden, Norway, Denmark, are beginning to balk. France and Britain indicating that something has to be done. But right now, as we speak, our stringers in Athens are indicating to us here at On Point that it appears that there's even the possibility of a military coup d'etat, military taking over. Now, Greece was under military rule for almost 30 years, a little over 25 years ago, and then everyone talked about the bringing back of democratic institutions and et cetera. But things are so volatile, and of course the Greek military has always been sensitive with its longstanding feud. Though they are both a part of NATO, their longstanding feud with their neighbor to the east, Turkey. Of course, Turkey is the quote-unquote final linchpin in the so-called eastern flank of NATO. But the Turks are worried with respect to the instability, keyword, that is now taking place in Greece, if you will. And so we keep our eye on that here from our seat, if you will, in the United States. But it is a terrible situation. And it will, unfortunately, if there is a default by Greece, an economic collapse, it will have a effect on us here in the United States because, first of all, a significant number of European central banks are carrying paper, if you will, in other words, debt. On behalf of Greece, and any problem there, any forfeiture, if you will roll over to the United States. The Treasury Department, Secretary Guyton, is not even discussing how much Turkish paper that the United States and its banking institutions are holding, both the Federal Reserve and quote-unquote private banks. So it is a very delicate situation. Two other points before we leave.
I'll go right ahead, sir.
It appears that we are on the verge of a shutdown here in Minnesota. We are about 13 days away from a shutdown of government services here in Minnesota. Many experts are saying we do not expect a compromise, if you will, between the Democratic governor, Mark Dayton, and the Republican-controlled Senate and House. And so there could be a lot of suffering in the state of Minnesota if the kind of shutdown that is being talked about happens. Now, there are motions before the Minnesota courts talking in terms that there are certain essential services that must continue, if you will, basically life support services, if you will, but we don't know what the decision of the court will be. This is a very ugly time in Minnesota. And then finally, if it's ugly here, it's even worse in Wisconsin. Wisconsin Supreme Court earlier this week, Don, on a 4-3 vote, upheld the actions of the Republican-controlled legislature in Wisconsin, decimating and ending our collective bargaining. And I think you are going to begin to see the beginning of some serious problems in the state of Wisconsin, and then I think Ohio and possibly Indiana won't be far behind. So anyway, it's kind of a quick update of what's happening other places domestically, internationally, as it pertains to the financial markets. But then on the other hand, Don Allen, I understand we're doing very, very well here in Minneapolis, particularly after the tornado. I understand everybody is like a fat cat. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, they're doing great. I just start with the Mission Impossible music because it's an impossible mission, Mr. Edwards.
Talk to us a little bit about it, Don Allen from Studio B.
Well, this has
been an interesting week, to say the least, here in the Twin Cities, and particularly as millions are actually being raised for a disaster relief for the beleaguered populations of North Minneapolis. But it appears that On Point and its affiliates have discovered some, at best, inconsistencies in the distribution of money. Can you begin to walk us through this?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go through a five-day period, Mr. Edwards, through June 10th to June 15th. On June 10th, you know, we had found out, or right before, after the tornado, actually, let me back up a whole month. The morning of May 23rd, it was announced that there was $166 million worth of damage, and the city of Minneapolis was going to go to FEMA and attempt to declare Minneapolis, North Minneapolis especially, more specifically, a disaster zone. And so they would qualify them to get dollars to, you know, rebuild the infrastructure, do the housing.
The threshold was $6.2 million that you needed to have declared, and
yes,
that would make us eligible for federal disaster relief, right?
Exactly. Okay.
Okay.
And what had happened, the cockroaches came out of the woodwork in North Minneapolis. You know, $166 million, of course, as you know, Mr. Edwards, from both of us living here, you know, they could pay off a couple of people and keep them quiet in the corner. Okay.
But yeah.
On that following Saturday, I had a chance to interview Senator Al Franken here in Minnesota, Democrat, and he said the FEMA estimated the cost at $16.9 million.
Correct, so there was we've been reporting. Okay.
Yes, and that did include help for individuals. Now, on the 15th, actually earlier this week, Monday, we found out that the individuals, renters and business owners and uninsured folks were not being covered at all whatsoever by FEMA on this initial money. And that sent, you know, the politicians into a whirlwind because FEMA denies renters and individuals disaster assistance. And city officials are going to get their money back, Mr. Edwards, as far as this volunteer vouchers they're handing in and recording hours and things like that. But yet, you know, the North Minneapolis is over 40% African-American, and they just, you know, they're renters. There's not a solid, stable. It's called economic violence against them is what the term I was told to use. There's not families. There's families in there that don't even have sustainable jobs, you know, and mothers in the home raising three or four children by themselves. So it's a bad economic situation. So, of course, the city, it's easy for them to bypass and do their what I call the city of Minneapolis replacement. But in this case, Mr. Edwards, you know, there was a group formed, the North Minneapolis Tornado Relief and rebuild.
Now, this is the North Minneapolis Relief Fund, because we've got so many parallel names for transparency purposes. Now, this was the North Minneapolis Relief Fund, right?
Yeah, this is the fund created, if we're talking about the thing. We are. I'm seeing your signal there. It's created by the Minneapolis Foundation, where people were asked to donate to the Minneapolis Foundation. You know, this is potentially a $5 million windfall in donations if it's planned correctly and executed correctly. But, you know, the Minneapolis Foundation has close to what? Close to $1 million collected. And this was an opportunity for the people in the disaster group, the community stakeholders, the business people at the table, the nonprofits at the table, to actually make a difference and restructure, rebuild, and reformat and hit the reset button on North Minneapolis.
Okay.
So, Mr. Edwards, you and I, we sat in those meetings over at Summit Academy OIC with the Major Lewis King commanding the meetings, you know, dress right, dress.
That in fact, was our CNC, controlling command, as we call it in the military. Controlling command, CC.
Control command.
Gotcha.
And the art of war was in full effect. So, you know, and I need to review some stuff, Mr. Edwards, and then get to my point. I'm going to pass the ball to you, okay?
Okay.
So early on, when the money from the Minneapolis Foundation, the foundation had put up an RFP, okay? And even though there was money out of the funds before the RFP was put up, the RFP was placed on the table. And our commander-in-chief over there said, hey, I want everybody to – we're going to do this as a group. We're going to file this RFP as a group. I want a communications committee. I want a housing committee. I'm going to put Pillsbury United Communities in charge. We want the Urban League at the table. We want the defunct City Inc. at the table and its headmaster. So – we want all these people at the table.
William English, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Mr. William English, yes. And they want all these people at the table to build a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mr. Edwards, I get to toot my horn for a little while here, because understanding how to write proposals and understanding that there has to be significant components within this particular proposal to assure that the residents — that's a key word there. That's a meat tag, as they say on internet marketing. The residents of North Minneapolis are taken care of. The residents of North Minneapolis are a priority, and the residents of North Minneapolis have a right to return and a sustainable living base from this point on. So I'm sitting back, and I'm thinking that, hey, this is going to be great. This is going to be wonderful, okay? These people – oh, Mr. – we have a caller. We haven't even gave the number out yet.
Oh, let's get the callers in. This is extremely important to hear from community, from callers. Go right in.
You're live on the air, man. This is calling.
Hello, this is Anthony Newby, Donald. I'm just a concerned North Minneapolis citizen.
Okay.
With an issue I'd like to talk to you about.
Okay, well, let's hear it. I don't know if you've been listening, Mr. Newby, but we've been talking about the group collaborative that put in proposals to the Minneapolis Foundation. And why don't you just tell us your piece, and then I can pick up after you get done here.
Yeah, sorry, Donald, I missed the first part of that conversation, so this may not be related, so I apologize in advance. But I'm a new Northside resident. I lived in Uptown, for those familiar with Minneapolis, for about 10 years and recently moved to North Minneapolis. The tornado that came through missed my house by about 4 blocks. And so I'm learning about the community, learning about the elders in the community, and then this event happened. And the response has been great in some areas, and in other areas I was totally shocked and appalled by the way the city has dealt with it. And especially coming from Uptown, I know what the social service capacity is, and I know that a lot of those services weren't there in Minneapolis.
Okay, Mr. Newby.
I'm sorry, Don, go ahead.
Yeah, hold that thought. I need to bring this other individual on the line. You're live on air. Who am I speaking with?
Lewis King.
Okay, Mr. King, stand by. I have Mr. Anthony Newby on the line explaining something. Go ahead, Mr. Newby.
So anyway, Don, you know, working with some of the folks on the ground there, an idea occurred to me and, in fact, many of the other leaders there. We're dealing with a city with 15,000 vacant and foreclosed properties.
Hello, Lewis King. How you doing?
Yeah, you're there. You're there. Just hold on. This Mr. Newby has the floor right now. We'll get right to you, Mr. King.
Great.
But,
go ahead, Mr.
There's 15,000 roughly vacant foreclosed properties in Minneapolis. And I'm watching people get bused to shelters, to armories, to, you know, all sorts of places using taxpayer money. And some folks have to use their own money because their homes were destroyed to just provide basic shelter for themselves. And that would never have happened, in my opinion, in other parts of the city. Had that cut through my neighborhood in Uptown, it would have never happened. But in any case, it occurred to me, with all these vacant and foreclosed properties, why are we not housing folks in these vacant and foreclosed properties?
Exactly.
It's a logical solution. And so I went to the mayor's office and approached him with the issue, and he seems very interested and wants to go forward and pursue it further. At least that was the initial meeting. He's a politician, and his track record in North Minneapolis is
crappy,
sort of varied at best. I mean, there's mixed results, right?
Yeah,
you know that better than anybody.
Yes, I do.
But I want to let you and your listeners know that I'm going back this week at an invitation from the mayor to pursue this idea, and I certainly hope it gets some traction and some legwork. There's no reason in the world that when an event like a natural disaster devastates a community like has happened in North Minneapolis, and there are homes available for people to live in temporarily, right? I'm not offering to give people homes, but it's a temporary solution for people to get back on their feet. There's no reason in the world this shouldn't happen. I expect the mayor to do something about this. I'm optimistic that he will, and I hope your listeners will push the issue. You know, call the mayor, work with your local leaders, and really try to make this issue happen as a starting point for people who have lost their homes because of this disaster.
Mr. Newby, I agree. You make a great point there. I think that is one of the significant things that should have been in the original plan of action. And we have Mr. King, he's on mute right now, but we're going to bring him in about 30 seconds here. But that would be a great plan because those homes are there. They are available.
Mr. Allen, we're going to have to. It's a wonderful idea, mm-hmm. has great potential, but one of our responsibilities is to be as transparent as possible here on Point. And so what we will do after we hear from Mr. King is talk about some of the legal restrictions and obstructions that unfortunately exist with respect to these houses that the gentleman is talking about. So we will respond to that once he's completed his observations.
All right. Okay. Well, Mr. Newby, anything else?
No, I look forward to the conversation, guys. Thanks for even approaching the issue. It's not being talked about on any other media outlet at this point, so I give a lot of respect to you guys for even bringing the issue up. Thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
All right, okay. We have another caller, Mr. Allen?
Yes, Mr. King, you're live on Point.
Hello, guys.
Hey, how are you?
All right, Louis.
I'm good. How are you?
All right.
Doing great.
I admire you guys, I tell you.
Okay.
What's on your mind, Louis? What's your thinking?
I figure if we're going to have a discussion, you know, and certainly you've been in the house from minute one, and while we don't always agree, we have good exchanges, but I might be able to add something to the flavor. I do want to comment on the last caller's comments.
Mm-hmm.
Are you there?
Yeah, we're here. We got you.
Simplistic answers on the surface, you know. I'm sure both of you are aware of how, and I'm not a housing guy at all, but the difficulty of finding out who even owns some of these foreclosed properties is still the United States of America. So just to put people in them, I imagine you know how they treat our folk if we were trying to do that. But first of all, I want to thank you guys for your participation over the last few weeks, and certainly you were about to get to the question of the funding. I want, before we get into that, though, say that the biggest thing that anyone can do is help us find the 5,000 people that Hennepin County came in and said that they cannot account for. I think that this is unacceptable, and I'm sure that you will agree with me.
Okay, Mr. King, first of all, it's 5,000 families and an estimated 12,000 people. Now, if 5,000 families, if it was
500 people, it would still be unacceptable. So.
Yeah, it is unacceptable. But before we even get to the funding place, you know, we're going through a kind of a timeline here of what had happened, basically, in our eyes, in our opinion, and in our suggestions and thoughts of a process here that had the potential to actually bring North Minneapolis to a whole new level of black consciousness with business people sitting at the table, economic development, education. I mean, there was tons of roll-off here available. Like I said, there was tons of roll-off. Now, as I have gotten out, and I'm going to release an exclusive story Monday, I had left off with Mr. Edwards just before we took Mr. Newby's call, talking about the RFP, request for proposal, from the Minneapolis Foundation, and that, you know, we all as a collaborative had agreed by your suggestion that there would be one proposal, okay, one proposal. And, you know, me kind of being the, a person who has a lot of questions, not necessarily to feed my blog, but to feed my mind so that I can rest and understand that these people have the business acumen to complete a mission, to have a successful mission, a successful end game if you're into sports. And so what I have discovered is that there are 5 to 7 different proposals submitted to the Minneapolis Foundation from just within that group. Okay, that's number one. Number two, not one penny of the $230 that it was when I left the room on Wednesday.
$230,000, Don. You said $230. $230,000.
$230,000, yes. Not one penny of that is going to make it to the average renter, the uninsured person that lives on that corner that had that house destroyed or that tree fall on it, okay? Number three, there was never any talk of having insurance adjusters, attorneys, insurance agents, which are different than adjusters, to come in the room and talk to people that had a house that might have had insurance, might not have insurance. So what you have going on in North Minneapolis right now, you have contractors out, and I'm not going to say any names because there's 21 different contractors that aren't even from the city of Minneapolis actively doing work today in North Minneapolis on homes, okay? And so there was never – what's going on is people are saying, well, the insurance company is going to give me 10 grand. Well, it costs 20 grand to get the work done, okay? So these people aren't going to get the work done. There's people that need windows installed. Well, some of the insurance companies are paying for the window itself, but not the installation. And at one point, not one point, did we ever, ever bring in the community at a meeting after 5 o'clock of the affected people. But what we had is a bunch of people at the table, including me, including my co-host, that were concerned, that wanted successful, measurable outcomes. And some of us got our legs cut off by collateral damage, you know, from individuals without the intellectual capacity of a stuffed rabbit, but that was okay. So you're looking at what's happening here, and you have all these people, and you would expect something better out of us,
Let me interject. All right.
Go ahead.
First of all, as I've said from the onset, if this is a 36-month process, and we're in the fourth week, Don, we're probably at 2.5% of the time. That's item one. Item two, going back to your piece about hunting as a pack, I said from the onset that I expected people to break away, and I wouldn't try to stop them. It wouldn't matter in the end, and I still hold to that. As a fact, the Minneapolis Foundation got 57 proposals over $2 million, and they probably have about $1 million, and they're not going to give it all out. So it doesn't matter who puts in a proposal. It matters what decisions the foundations make. Number three, and you should be fair on this one. I really expect more of you. You know, and you've sat in that room, that the first priorities was not about putting money in anyone's hands, and that's not where that went. That was a function of the county. The first thing was to ensure that we found the people and we took care of emergency services. And I'm proud to say there's no one in the shelter over in the park anymore, which was deplorable in those families, so had some tough things going with them. Finally,
yeah, we have to give a big shout out.
Let me finish on this. The housing people are just now beginning to meet, and they're going to go forward. But even before that, the priority has to be to put these kids to work this summer. And I'm working my butt off to get $450,000 to put 150 kids to work for the summer. Now, back to the matter at hand, which I think that you and your co-host can be very useful with, we must hold the elected officials accountable and the bureaucracies accountable for accounting for these people. Any other discussion at this point is inappropriate because until we know where all the people are, there's no sense in claiming how much they need. We got to find them, and I need you to get on board with that.
But see, here goes the thing. Here goes the second side to that. There's two sides to every story, and there's the right side. Okay? There is no incentive. There is no incentive right now as it stands for any of the 5,000 families, I say an estimated 12,000 individuals, to even come back to North Minneapolis and be made aware of because there's no help for them, number one. Number two, we created another referral agency, i.e., or a la the African American Men Project, okay? Because if Sally comes in who has a six-month-old and two other children, a 9- and 12-year-old, and her apartment got damaged, and there's an apartment across the street, yeah, she can go to the county and get first and last month's rent. That's not going to take care of Sally's problem. Sally might need food. Yeah, she can get food from the food stamps on her EBT card or whatever. But Sally might need a job. Sally might need an education. Sally might need a future. We've totally denied those people through this process that particular range of options.
That's ludicrous, John. That's ludicrous. She needed all those things before the tornado. Let's step up.
That's what I was saying.
And be factual about it, all right? Nobody denied her that. We can talk about
that
now. Nobody made Sally have three children, okay?
Mr. King,
let's be clear.
You made my point.
Oh,
you just made my point exactly. You said before the tornado she needed those services. You have over 150, 200 nonprofits in North Minneapolis for the last 30 years that have been sitting on their lackadaisical asses not fulfilling their function.
I can't speak to them. I'm speaking to the issue at hand, and you know how I feel about social services and nonprofits. Don't give me anything. Give me a job. That's what I stand for. And I get out there and protest and go to the legislature and take serious risks about that and welcome you to join me at any time. The fact on the table now is we got 5,000 families or people out there that are unaccounted for, and we need to come together as a community and find them and tell them we're here. Whether people make money off of it or not, I haven't made a dime, don't intend to. We're here to help them, and if want that community in the end to reflect the values that we believe in, we got to get the word out. And I think that's where we need to start. Secondly, we got to put the kids to work, ensure that they have summer jobs so we can have a community-based stimulus. And we're not going to stand by silently while the bureaucracies and folks don't respond to this. I think it's time to create a little tension. What do you think?
Well, you said something about the elected officials. I mean, we can start with R.T. Ryback.
I cannot look at this guy without laughing.
I'm not gonna call any names here because we can go up and down the chain right now, and they have to be put on alert, and we can't start off first of all, you know, dropping the 10-ton nuke. I think that the first thing we got to do is say to them, and I intend to put a letter on the streets on Monday, saying, hey, this is unacceptable. This is unacceptable, and we as a community expect more, and we're willing to work with you. We're not going to stand by silently while people casually say they can't.
Brother Cam, let me ask you a question here on that particular reflection by you. In the meeting Thursday, there was a reference by yourself and another individual that actually there had been a meeting, some kind of meeting with the mayor on Tuesday. Were these issues brought up on Tuesday? Did you have an opportunity, because I know the mayor is preparing to fly out of here tomorrow night to go to Washington to try to sit down directly with President Obama and appeal the decision by FEMA. Could you share with us some of the reflections and discussions that went on in that Tuesday meeting with the mayor?
Okay, I have not been in a meeting with the mayor personally since we had the initial one, but I did have a telephone conversation with him the night before the FEMA declaration was put on the streets. And I did bring this to his attention. I mean, you have been in the room with me, and I appreciate your comments about the rebuilding. For instance, and this is where I need your help, there's no number on the table for the FEMA public works or infrastructure declaration. How much money? Will public works do it? Will they contract it out? What will be the goals for minority business and worker participation? That's money that's right in front of us right now. This has
now, whose job is that within the city? Is that Mike Christensen? Is that Velma Corvell's? I mean, whose job is that?
Well, you're going to run into, first of all, you're going to run into public works, all right? But, see,
mm-hmm.
the city, and here's what people really fail to realize. The city does streets, sidewalks, and structures, police and fire. After that,
mm-hmm.
when it comes down to people, it's the county. So
mm-hmm.
when it comes to the sidewalk, it's the city, and that's public works. And so an excellent place to start is how much damage was there? How much are they getting from FEMA? Hey, are they going to use, assuming that public works had a full-time job and a capital program before this came down, are they
mm-hmm.
going to use external capacity? If so, what will be the methodology for establishing the participation goals for minority businesses and minority workers?
Oh,
that's
already in place. Isn't that already in place?
Well,
that's supposed to be – that's already in place as a part of an impending, quote-unquote, emergency plan as well as an impending employment plan that the city
has been saying. Well, I would suggest to you, Ron, that we have the opportunity to say to them, why can't we go above the normal goals? That's what I'm saying. Okay.
Let me say on that, though, Lewis. And, you know, at one point we were talking about being able to have the mayor come in and address the committee directly.
That will be Wednesday.
Oh, he's coming in Wednesday now after he returns from Washington?
Yep.
Okay. And then also Mike Christensen. And, you know, at some point you probably want to bring back Johnny Burns, the contract compliance director for the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, because that's who handles that number. And then you may want to ask the county to send over their contract compliance people, because they would be the ones that would handle the numbers for the county. Because I'd like to be present. I'd like to hear them tell us on how they're going to operate the goals. See, the goals have already been set. The goals have been in place for a long time, as I think you know, being involved with the organization that you're involved with. So the goals are already there. The problem is a new process is being put in place for SUBP, and I'm not sure that a lot of our minority contractors are going to be eligible, but, hey, I'm with you, my friend. I would really like to hear the county, but specifically the city, because it's within the city's domain.
That's correct. That's correct.
The county, and I would like to hear those who are the direct keepers of the authority and statutory authority, and that is the Civil Rights Department, indicate to us how they can get this done. I think that's just wonderful. Here's the thing, Louis Reese, we say this. We were at a meeting on, I think it was the 9th of June, of the minority contractors. In fact, we left the meeting at your facility and went there. And this same kind of question that you're just talking about came up, the same kind of discussion. Mr. Burns, in fact, was there representing the interests of the city. And I'm just not sure that there was the kind of clarity and transparency that would allow us to, as black people, if you will, and others to, and because there was a racial mixture in the room down there at Heritage Village, I'm just not sure that there was the kind of clarity from the city's representative and keeper of the statutory authority about how a plan like that would work. But if you're saying that the mayor will be in on, is it Wednesday, Louis?
Yeah.
Okay, the mayor will be coming in on Wednesday. He'll be bringing his support staff with him, I hope. And
now,
they will be...
at this point in the game, here's what I'm discovering, all right?
Okay.
And you and I, we've been around each other a long time. It's one step at a time, ready one, ready two. I'm discovering that government, at least at the lower levels, doesn't think systematically. They have not demonstrated that. So if you bring somebody with him, they want to hold a casual conversation. They don't really, all the analytical tools that we see on television are not evidently being used at this point. If so, they're not being shared with us. And that I'm more than frustrated now. I am more than frustrated. So
okay.
I would advise us, though, to open the door rather than pounce, if you understand
uh-huh.
what I mean. And that is,
okay.
you know, to ask questions like, when will we have the opportunity, okay? When will it be available to participate in helping to shape this thing? I mean, we should
lay
that away.
I'm glad you raised that question. June 26th at the Central Library. You know, that was very timely, Louis, that you raised that particular question, because the crafting of that kind of procedure process will be discussed in a public forum on the 26th of June. Haven't you been notified about this?
No,
data?
How'd you get that data? How'd you get that? Your normal
that data is on the website of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department.
Yes, it is.
Did you know that? Oh, yeah. See, this is the second of two meetings of this nature that was ordered by the Minneapolis City Council in November of 2010.
Oh, okay.
Because apparently some city council members, I don't want to say that they were omnipotent and they saw the tornado coming, but clearly they saw that there was a problem about inclusion of African-Americans and others into, quote-unquote, the public works arena and other arenas. That is excellent, Lewis, that you have made that suggestion, because that, I think, allows you the leverage with the mayor to insist that Ms. Corvell join us.
Well, I don't
and
think
explain to us what the procedure is that is already in place.
Right.
Because here's that's the purpose of the meeting on the 26th. Now, here's the problem. RSVPs are to be made by the 20th.
Yeah.
That would
okay.
Be Monday, right?
That's right. That's right. You have to RSVP, which doesn't make much sense. I mean, this is a public meeting.
I think
that's wonderful. You know, Lewis, we'd be looking forward to working like heck with you on getting that done and having Ms. Corvell and her staff come in, because everything that you've just said to us, they have already indicated and have been directed by the city council and the mayor to put that in place, to etch it in stone.
Let me make sure I understand. The first thing we want to do, if they're putting the compliance measures in place, that's kind of like the third step. The first step is to understand what did the city declare? What did they say was the damage? How much was it for public works?
Well, we've been asking that, Lewis, with respect to requesting for the last 3 weeks that we have a chance to sit down and talk to FEMA.
Right? And then secondly, how much are the feds going to give them? We haven't heard. And when will it get here, right?
And how much who's going to give them?
The feds. How much will the feds give them?
$16.9 million.
How much?
$16.9 million between Hennepin and Anoka County, Lewis.
Okay.
16.9. That's what the resolution that was accepted by the Obama administration says. I mean, that's the figure.
All right.
16.9.
And then now we have a target, gentlemen. And
yes,
so
we do. Yes, we do. We have all three phases of what you've just been talking about to us. We have those three phases right at our fingertips. This is great. This is absolutely great.
Yep. Yeah. I think we got. It's great. We had this conversation.
And we'll be looking for. And you know, in fact, what we want to do is invite you back next Saturday, because we can give an update as a part of the transparency doctrine here at On Point. We can give an update to some of the things. But we are in place. I would suggest that, in fact, I know I've already called and asked to be, quote unquote, put on the list. The 20th is the deadline. The meeting is at the Central Library on the 26th. This
great.
Is great.
Thank
this
you
is
for
absolutely
the opportunity
great.
To have this discussion, gentlemen.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, Mr. Allen, I tell you, and we said it's probably the 24th. We kept saying the 26th, though. That was the date. This is great, Don. That Mr. King laid out some stuff that already was in play.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm pulling my boots, my hip waders on still. They're still on, but
yeah,
it was interesting. The whole conversation was interesting, but you know, I mean, there's a couple of directions, as you know, Mr. Edwards, that we could go on this. I mean, just from the simple fact, and the one I'm focusing on, and I don't mean to like really just ride this, but you know, there's no incentive for people to come back to North Minneapolis. This grant was written, and there's not $1.
Now, which grant are you talking about, Don? Are you talking about the grant of the week of the 23rd, the week of the 22nd of May? Or are you talking about the grant that was being written over the last that period of the 10th through the 15th? Now, that's what we didn't get a chance. Now it's the opportunity to get you back on the chronology. Because we had two calls, which are very important, but now we must finish quote unquote the chronology, and that is we were right around the 15th. The 15th was the deadline for submission of applications, RSP, right? And,
yes.
And as you pointed out, and now Mr. King says is as many as well. My God, what did he say? 40,
57. 57.
Grants have been made totaling $2 million, asking for access to $1 million. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, that has to be, Don, that has to be the second grant process, because here's what happened, and we need to just get into this and continue to have these phone lines open, because on the 3rd of June 2011, the Minneapolis Foundation, the Greater United Way, and a group called mminnesota.org or something like that put out a status update. I mean, we're all clear. We're all pretty learned individuals. Status update means a report on the status of what was being done. In this case, it was the release of monies to do a number of things immediately, right?
Yes.
Now, one of the things that our committee, the group that we're involved with, could you give our absolute proper name, and that is we are the Northside Tornado Committee?
The Northside Tornado Disaster Relief Committee, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, and we're different from the Northside Relief Fund, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Northside Relief Fund is legally tied to the United Way and the Minneapolis Foundation.
Yeah.
Now, in the communique of June 3rd, status update, one of the things that they pointed out is that they had already given monies from the $780,000 that was raised as of that particular date. And one of the things that you and I realized upon examination is that we already have done as a committee 30 to 50 houses. We've done damage repair on 30 to 50 houses, and we are involved in the area of working with uninsured residents, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you know, in the meeting the other day, I was trying to ask the question, number one, do we have an audit committee? Has our audit committee reported anything? Because normally when you're doing that kind of work and you've already received money to do it, because that's what it said. Because it also said that Urban Homeworks, you're familiar with that, right?
Yes.
That Urban Homeworks was involved in helping with the certification of minority contractors in the relief effort, right?
Yes.
Now, June 3rd was the date of the dissemination of that update. By the way, since then there was another one on the 10th, and then there was one on the 17th, as we understand it. Now, we got into a bind the second week in June. A reporter by the name of Randy First of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the largest newspaper here in the state of Minnesota, wrote an investigative report, and that's where the list that we all talk about, became a piece of controversy, because the list was put out. It was being disseminated from a trailer on Broadway and Penn Avenue, right?
Yes.
And the list had the names of contractors that people could trust to do the work, right?
Yes.
Now, the Star Tribune reported, I didn't see anybody attacking the Star Tribune or repudiating it, and I did not see any letters to the Star Tribune indicating that it wasn't true. The Star Tribune indicated that almost half of the names on the list were unlicensed and consequently operating illegally in the city of Minneapolis. Now, in that same article, investigative report, Mike Christensen, who has been in numerous meetings with us, in fact, was in a meeting with us, was it Monday, Mr. Allen?
Yes.
And was to give us some kind of update about something. He was in Friday a week ago and was to give us an update on that Monday, which never took place. Mr. Christensen never clarified for us what happened and why the city continued to carry that list on its own website to the legal disadvantage, if you will, of affected residents of the community. Now, we've not heard, and I guess we'll have to ask the state of Minnesota's Department of Labor, because they sent investigators. In fact, if you go back, I'm looking at on our computer here, there's a picture of a gentleman. And Mr. King has said we don't want maybe just throw people's names out there, and so we'll do that. But there's a picture in the Star Tribune of an individual who has been involved with our committee, sitting at a desk being questioned by investigators from the Department of Labor about the list. In fact, the gentleman, the African-American gentleman, is holding the list in his hand. Now, we were told for a period of time from about maybe the 8th through the 12th, 13th, 14th, that nobody knew anything about the list, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Now, nobody knows how much folks were paid, because we have been identified as the Northside Tornado Relief Committee. we have been identified of being involved in an enterprise. We're involved in enterprise, Mr. Allen. I mean, you are a businessman. You understand? I'm certainly a student of English and et cetera. We are identified as being involved in a enterprise undertaking. We are repairing or have repaired 30 to 50 homes, as well as we are working with uninsured homeowners and residents so that there is not continued abuse against the interests of their property. Have you seen a report? Have we received a report on that?
No, we haven't. But in the chat room here, Mr. Edwards, I'm getting a little static. You're over there in Studio A. I'm here in Studio B. It's actually saying that the name of the group is the Northside Community Response Team. And it says none of the unlicensed contractors got work or the work did not require contractors. And I don't understand.
That's not what the website of the Department of Labor said, and that's not what the story said, nor did I see any refutation by anybody to the Star Tribune. And we talked to the investigative reporter, Mr. Randy First, who was in a couple of meetings of our committee, and there was no refutation along those lines. I mean, it's great to say it now, but, you know, that never happened. In fact, my sense is it's happening now because folks didn't know that the June 3rd status update had been made known.
Okay, and Mr. Eric, I need to set this Yahoo straight that's writing all the stuff in the chat room because I don't know who it is personally, and that's why I call him Yahoo. This thing is, it's about the unlicensed contractors that got on the list. But let's back it up a step. It's also about how the list was originally formed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This Northside Community Response Team said, okay, we've heard from several people that the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, Belmacor, and all those folks put the list together, but then we get word back. I talked to Johnny Burns, who is the director of
contract compliance director.
For the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, and he said, I had to call them and tell them to take some names off the list.
Yeah, but now his statement to you was after the Star Tribune's investigative report.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so
I said,
where was the origin of the list? So the origin of the list, Mr. Edwards, we have the backup to the morning of the 23rd of May.
At 8 o'clock in the morning,
where contractors from North Minneapolis and some of the usual suspects were called together on Bryan Avenue off Broadway and to discuss the plan to go after $166 million and how to get what my boss used to say, your unfair share, you know? And so, you know, with $166 million, you could pay the usual suspects like they normally do, and they don't do anything, and they run away, you know, and nothing gets done. So after all that changed, there was a different formation, because if you notice, Mr. Edwards, at the first meeting, contractors showed up there that said that they had, you know, they had kind of screwed things up.
Talking about the meeting of the 27th of May. There were two meetings. There was a meeting at 8 o'clock in the morning at UROC, and then there was a meeting at 3 o'clock across the street at the Urban League. In fact, in the meeting on the 27th at 3 o'clock, we were being told that many contractors allegedly were going into their own pocket and paying for materials. And I'm not sure that that was true because money had already been awarded to our committee.
Yeah.
I mean, we want to be transparent. I mean, you know, we were members of the committee, and we certainly found out that we were involved, I repeat the word again, in enterprises.
Exactly. Yes, we were, which brings in a couple significant Minnesota state laws that have to be adhered to. And one of those was refuted, the Minnesota open meeting law.
Mm-hmm.
They said it does not apply. Well, it does apply in this case, even if the building you're sitting in has gotten $1 in federal funds. It doesn't
uh-huh.
have to be related. Now, the organizations sitting around the table, if they received any federal funds, maybe indirectly from the city or from some slush fund or some other foundation, the Minnesota Open Meeting Law applies. I'm not an attorney, Mr. Edwards, but I could play one on TV. Okay, and I have a copy of the Minnesota Open Meeting Law and have, you know, been well-versed and had to use it on several occasions, of course, with the city of Minneapolis and meetings on their different projects to stop violence.
Okay. Let me do this because again, like you said, the Yahoo or wherever it is, let's get into the fact because this document can be found. We found it on the website of the North Minneapolis Recovery Fund by linking through the Minneapolis Foundation. We're looking right now in our studios at a document that has the heading Minneapolis Foundation, Greater Twin Cities United Way, and GiveMinnesota.org. It says Minnesota Health, dash, North Minneapolis Recovery Fund, status update, June 3rd, 2011. It has four main captions. How much has been raised? How are, not how will, but how are donations benefiting the community? Next steps and about the fund. Now, they indicate $780,000 is in play at this particular time. It's been raised in 2 weeks, okay?
Yes.
Now, one of the things they say, you know, we are the Northside Community Response Team. That's how we've been identified. Now, on June 3rd, 2011, the Minneapolis Foundation, other two organizations, issued through the North Minneapolis Recovery Fund the following communique, just like we do in the military. And one of the things it says at point two, the Northside Community Response Team to make repairs to 30 to 50 homes and protect uninsured homeowners from future property damage. Now, is there another Northside Community Response Team at play that received compensation funding? By the way, what they say is, thanks to the generosity of the community, $780,000 is raised in 2 weeks, including, and then it goes on to say, the Minneapolis Foundation and Greater Twin Cities United Way have announced. Now, they have announced. That means that they have spoke to this, right?
Yes.
The first grants to support the recovery effort, these grants support the work of. Now, that's the King's English, right?
Yes, it
now,
is.
My question to you, sir, early on, before these text messages and calls started coming in, was that this clearly was our second grant, correct?
Yes.
In fact, I asked that question at the end of the meeting Thursday, all right? So I'm puzzled now about these texts that you're getting, sir.
Well, we have a caller online that
Let's get the caller in. We have plenty of time. We have 30 minutes. Let's get him.
You're live on the air, man. That's who's calling.
Guys, this is Deep Strike 6.
Oh, hey, how are ya?
Because no good deed goes unpunished.
No, it doesn't.
Now, how can you turn around and attack a list when in the first few minutes of that tragedy, everybody was trying to do good by people? And the facts are, and no one has refuted this, these are the facts. Patch and repair does not require a license, number one. You don't have to pull a permit to put a tarp on somebody's house. That is a fact. Number two, the trailer that was managing the list did not send any unlicensed contractors to do any work. We can document that.
I'll agree with that because, you know, I'm in support of
those
Salem LLC. I'm in
those
support of Salem LCC, LLC. So go ahead.
Let me get to the next one. Now, the way that business is typically done and the way that the money came out, contractors showed up, did work, they had accounts somewhere
for. Which money, Lewis, came? Which money came down? What money
you
talking about came down?
So let's talk about.
No, Lewis, what money came down? What
yeah.
money are you talking about?
There
you
was
money
came not
down.
The,
what money
not,
came
not
down?
The money for patch and repair. The money for patch and repair.
Oh, yeah, where'd it come
it came from?
I believe it came from
the Minneapolis Foundation and went to a housing fund in North Minneapolis, which then sent it to Urban Homeworks, which then contracted with the We Care people, okay, and which directed the contracts. Now, let's get to it. The contractors, of course, have lines of credits and credit cards. They weren't collecting money first and then going out there. They go out, get the materials, do the work, and then try to get paid. So it was factual at the Urban League meeting that they were coming out of their own pockets, but in reality, that's pretty much how business is done. You go out,
I'm sorry, they did say that they were coming out of their own pocket. But go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, because these were small jobs. I mean, it was a $30,000 job. You might want something down. But the fact of the matter is, the people couldn't pay. I mean, let's focus on that. They didn't have anywhere else to go, and somebody showed up. I mean, now we need to be real about that one. And if the city has some administrative problems coming into the game, then they need to tighten their act up. That's clear. But here's the other fact. If you showed up to try to pull a license without would try to pull a permit without a license, you wouldn't have been able to get one. So whether your name was on the list or not, it really would not have mattered at the end of the day, right?
Look, here's my position.
I just wanted to be fair.
They might be absolutely correct. Obviously, there's a lack of concurrence on this end. But let me say what's happening. See, what's happening, by statute, the Minnesota Department of Labor is conducting an investigation of what happened. So we can try to surmise. Let's do like you do in the meeting now. Let's go in turn, okay?
Okay, you're right.
And so we will find out pretty quick when the Minnesota Department of Labor completes this investigation. Star Tribune is still looking at it. And, of course, they're trying to get the attention of the county attorney, Mike Freeman. And so we really don't have to worry about that. Like you said, we need to find the 5,000 people, and then we need to do the other two things that you talked about, the jobs and then getting in place the format, if you will, to make sure that our people can work. And that's where we're all committed. Let's get that done. Now, what you're saying to us is it pertains to the list, if you will, and what happened and how it happened and when the money came down and et cetera. Hey, that'll work itself out. You know what I mean? That'll come to fruition. It's like sour milk. It'll come to the top of the coffee. So, hey, my brother, we appreciate it, man.
Always.
Okay?
Have a good one.
All right. Take care.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yes, sir. So we now know that there was some money that came in.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But how much was it, Mr. Allen? Do you remember?
I have never seen a report. I have asked for a report and told that I was attacking. I have asked to see the plan for the human needs and told that I was attacking. And part of this, you know, in business, Mr. Edwards, you know that if you go into downtown Minneapolis, I get up in the morning and I'm fortunate to go downtown, go to the 50th floor and say, hey, I'm going to this meeting at 2:00. There's no problem because I did my job. But in corporate America, if there's a problem at 8:00, you'd be damn sure that it's done and fixed by noon. Okay. And it's gone away. Here we have a significant issue with people at the table who have not good planning senses. You know, people that run nonprofits in most cases, Mr. Edwards, have not even run a shoe shine shop. Okay.
Yeah.
They haven't done million dollar payrolls. So you have people without the thought process, no matter how many degrees, and I will put my degrees up against theirs, no matter how many degrees they have, that they don't understand the process. And it's really not their fault because it's the innocence of not knowing. But if you have...
If
you have...
Let me just say this, I mean, because we've got a couple of items that we really need to move on to address that are of equal importance. You know, we were both, and maybe some people didn't realize that we had gone to that meeting. We were in a meeting on June 9th, minority contractors, and one of the things that was said by a representative from Thor and others, that they still hadn't received any money. Mm-hmm. Now, there is obviously a credibility problem here, Mr. Allen. Not with us, not with the black bloggers.
No.
Because some of the most powerful institutions in the state, Minneapolis Foundation, the Greater United Way, issued a status update on the third day of June and indicated a significant payout for work that was already being done. Now, 6 days later, we are in a meeting of the minority contractors, and particularly African-American contractors are being told that they're still waiting on the money. Our good friend Mr. King has just clarified for us that money came in long before the 9th of June. In fact, it came in before the 3rd of June because the Minneapolis Foundation and Greater United Way documented it.
Yes, they did.
Okay? So I'm trying to get a feel now on why there's so much confusion and why you're receiving these text messages in Studio B talking about the information is correct and that we are attacking the list. The list is out there to be attacked.
Exactly.
Because the list was determined by the state of Minnesota, not by Don and Ron, by the state of Minnesota to be contrary to Minnesota law, Minnesota requirements by statute. Okay? The state of Minnesota did that. All right?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The list was jaundice. All right? Now, we've heard all kinds of explanations about the list, as I just said to our friend Mr. King. The Department of Labor is investigating. They're going to turn it over to the Attorney General, to Attorney General Swanson. Her people are going to look at it. Star Tribune is going to continue to proceed. And also, you know, the federal government is going to be looking at it, okay, because we would assume that the monies that came in prior to June 3rd that were being paid to somebody were philanthropic monies, okay?
Yeah.
And we assume that the federal monies have not come in. Now, I noticed that, you know, we went through a little quiz to see if we knew what the dollar amount was. Apparently, folks hadn't been listening. Things, life had been so good that folks were not listening to the interview that you did with junior senator from Minnesota, Franken, when he confirmed, accurately, the $16.9 million that the federal government had said that that's all that Minneapolis and well, let me back up. That's all that Hennepin County and Anoka County were going to be eligible for. That's the reason that our mayor, R.T. Ryback, is going to Washington, D.C., to try to meet directly with President Barack Obama and make a personal appeal. Is this not a correct narrative?
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. That is absolutely correct.
I'm getting confused with respect to why we're having all of this floundering in the water, okay? You know, the one thing that I have to say, I just don't think that folk knew that the United Way and the Minneapolis Foundation had posted on a website the fact that monies had been paid out as early as the 25th, 26th, 27th of May. But, hey, you know, to, you know, the We Care group and all the rest of them. But, hey, you know, all we can do, Mr. Allen, is move on. Anything else on your mind on this?
No, you know, I'm going to leave it alone because I can go into that proposal piece and just pick it apart page by page, line item by line item, but it's not even worth it because they played their own self. Again, you know, 100% of the cost going directly to administrative concerns, and not a nickel to the people. We have this same song with a new verse. So,
yeah. And so, you know, like I said, I'm just confused. But, hey, you know, Mr. King came up with a wonderful idea. I was surprised that he didn't know about the meeting at the downtown Central Library where the new plan for inclusion or lack of inclusion of African-Americans and others is under discussion. As we said, you're supposed to get your request in by the 20th. I mean, he kind of asked me, you know, almost like a interrogator at Guantanamo, how I knew that. And, of course, we know it because it's posted on the city of Minneapolis's website. I thought that our folks were on top of that, Mr. Allen.
No, they're not on top of it at all. Not on top of it at all, Mr. Edwards. It's kind of funny.
Well, I'm just taken back, sir. I'm just really taken back that this information is quote unquote not known. I just don't understand what's going on. Anyways, front page, Minneapolis Star Tribune this morning. City of Minneapolis, City Council, the official body, the final body, if you will, authorizes the payment of $2.19 million to the family of slain Dominic Felder, if you will, in the wrongful death of Mr. Felder at the hands of Minneapolis police officers. But also in that article is the fact that very quietly yesterday, the Minneapolis City Council immediately ordered a settlement with Ronald G. Brandon, the former director of investigation for the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, who we reflected on, and clearly a man who had knowledge of the shredding and disappearance of files, a $90,000 settlement with Mr. Brandon. I was just startled by that, Mr. Allen. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was just, you know, and I might have to talk to you about this a little bit, Mr. Edwards, because we know Ronald Brandon, you know, I had a couple of dealings with him at the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. He seemed like a stand-up kind of guy, and I know that there has been problems. There continues to be problems in the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights. I just got a report emailed to me by Dr. Sam Myers, who back in 2005 did a story with Judge Lang, if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Judge Lejeune Lang, yes.
Did an intensive report about the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights in collaboration with the Humphrey Institute and said that, hey, these things need to be changed immediately because the people you served aren't getting served. Okay, and
yeah.
They virtually ignored that report. And so, and okay. then we get the disparity report from NERA on the contract compliance side, which basically says, hey, you guys aren't enforcing anything. You're just sitting up on your butts going out long lunch breaks. And so.
And by the way, the entity that you named is a nationally represented and respected consulting firm hired by government entities, et cetera. And the citizens of Minneapolis paid them $500,000 to do a study that took 5 years called the Disparity Study, which was issued in October of 2010. Correct? Is that where we're – because we want to be transparent here. We want to make sure because I know, you know, the attack will be that we just putting out bad information.
Yeah, and that's what they're saying. All this information is factual. And it's really funny now that you said you talked about the Austin, Texas agency, NERA, that charged $500,000. You have an institute here with one of the top research minds in that area, Dr. Samuel Myers, over at the Humphrey Institute, okay,
mm-hmm.
who also issued a letter to the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights that they tried the stuff, which I published, that said the data was faulty. So the conclusion is no good. Okay? And so
mm-hmm.
this data that they put in, they never asked the average Joe, the average contractor's suggestions. Now, and you talked about the meeting, the first meeting at the library that they have, which was a review of the meeting at City Council where they had NERA come in and that the doctor come in and explain the disparity report and what was going on and kind of
mm-hmm.
sugarcoated a little bit for the city. There were people in that audience there at the library on that particular day, Mr. Edwards, that said, hey, you know what? You guys aren't reaching out to us. You don't have a Facebook page. You don't. I know these were people in the audience just telling Miss Velma Corbell, Johnny Burns, and the people there that, you know, there's no touch with the community from this department.
Mm-hmm.
And Ms. Corbell's statement was, well, you know, that takes a lot to do a Facebook page. It takes like 5 minutes, okay, for the
mm-hmm.
for a person off the street that never touched a commuter. And so
mm-hmm.
I'm listening to all these excuses, and they have excuse after excuse, and they have never really been proactive on anything. You just mentioned Mr. Dominic Felder in the settlement. Well, in most cities where there's a population with a black consciousness and a city entity like a civil rights department, the civil rights department would have picked this up immediately after they found out the circumstances and walked it all the way to success. Secondly, none of our black church or black clergy or ecumenical community is standing by this guy's side or his family's side. You know, you don't hear one statement from any of the call them poverty pimps that are out there. You don't hear nothing from
well,
the urban.
Well, let's do this. Actually, there are a number of cases that are troubling.
Yes.
This morning's paper talked about Felder.
Yes.
It also talked about Courtney Williams, a young African-American,
yes,
15-year-old African-American, shot execution style in a backyard in North Minneapolis. There was no inquiry. We also have the Smiths, Quincy Smith, and the gentleman, Mr. Smith, who was tasered to death at the YMCA downtown. Both that gentleman and Quincy Smith were both tasered to death by the police. Now, there has been no utterance from any civil rights organization or so-called civil rights leadership as it pertains to these particular situations. Now, the Williams case will be going to trial probably in a year or so. The Quincy Smith case, in which so many at KMOJ talked about how they love Quincy and they were going to keep the community abreast and up to speed and et cetera, which was a joke. That case will go to trial on April 1, 2013.
Wow.
And the federal court has set that date. And the city has then been told that they and the other side will be allowed that particular time to do discovery and have their – and there will be no continuances, by the way. So you have still pending the tragic death of Courtney Williams. You have pending the tragic deaths of the two Smiths, if you will, which we've talked about and reported on. In fact, Mr. Allen and I made a formal request to Velma Corbell after the death at the YMCA for a civil rights department violation or investigation of violations under the civil rights ordinance. She did not even give us the courtesy of responding.
No, she did not.
And we sought out the office of the mayor. He didn't give us the courtesy of a response, okay? But what has happened is that the mother of the victim at the YMCA who reside in Illinois have given notice of intent to the federal court that they will be filing a formal action against the city of Minneapolis. And by the way, one of the things that also happened in the Dominic Felder case, take note of the article in this morning's paper, my friends, because the federal judge, David Doty, who actually is a moderate conservative kind of judge, actually posed sanctions of $380,000 against the city of Minneapolis for quote-unquote frivolous actions, because that's really what that was about, and that's what increased it to $2.19 million, if you will. And the reason was that the judge knew that the motions by the city of Minneapolis to either reverse the judgment against them or to have a new trial were all frivolous based on the testimony at trial. And what happened was the judge also, by taking that action, sent a signal to the Eighth Circuit that not only if the Eighth Circuit decided, which I think that they were, that they were not going to reverse the decision in the case of Dominic Felder, that they, the Eighth Circuit, could have they could have increased it themselves, or they could have sent the case back to the judge to initiate additional sanctions. And so yesterday, in very close, quiet session, the city of Minneapolis issued and cut the check for $2.19 million, but yet no one has analyzed it, no one has talked about it, if you will, just as they have not done in the case of the two Smiths and of Courtney Williams. And so what you're saying, Mr. Allen, is absolutely on point.
Yes, and I'm looking at all the all the money that's going out, because a week before they had a large amount of settlements go out, and it seems like they try to keep that stuff stuffed, Mr. Edwards. I know this Ronald Brandon story is going to be a big thing here on Monday, and we're going to have to let people know, because, again, we've been saying this all along for the last almost going into 2 years now on our radio program and in our different periodicals and online blogging stuff, that there's a problem. There are challenges at the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, and no one seems to want to address any of that.
Let me say this, because I was a little surprised that our friend Mr. King did not know about the forum, because his organization is on the list. You and I were purged from the list early on. I can now tell you that. This communique, we're going to read it. It's very short, but it because we were examined, if you remember, by our statement, uh-huh. And how did we know that, which was interesting. It's entitled Minneapolis Disparity Recommendations, Final Meeting, Executive Summary. This goes out to the Minneapolis area communities from Velma Corvell, Director of Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, Wanted Community Forum on the Minneapolis Disparity Study. And she's inviting the people to the forum, okay? Now, this is dated, the date will be Tuesday, June 28, 2011. Yeah. From 6 to 6:30 will be registration. 6:30 to 8 will be the forum. Location, POLAD Room, Minneapolis Central Library, 300 Nicollet Mall. And you must RSVP by Friday, June 21st, 2011.
Hey, is there a phone number there for the RSVP?
Yes, there is. 612-673-2588.
Okay, and I'm going to put that out in the chat room. So
I was a little disappointed. I was a little taken back that there was even a challenge to us with respect to the fact that this was going on. Though I know that Ms. Corvell has desperately been trying to stealth this as best she could, because they really don't want any public input, if you will. But in that we were questioned about it, this is the information that was disseminated over a month ago or better. In fact, we would suggest, normally you ask me, Mr. Allen, we would suggest that folks check out our column on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder.
Okay.
Which
All right.
deals with some aspects of this. But let us continue on. We have about 14 minutes, is that correct?
Yeah, we have actually 16 minutes, 23 seconds and counting down here on Blog Talk.
All right, let's
give
us a telephone number now, because,
yes.
This is something rare. We didn't even have to get a phone number out this time.
Yeah, this is right. I sure did. If you're listening, we'd like you to call in with your thoughts, opinions, and suggestions. The toll-free number is 877-572-5787. 877-572-4288. Again, that toll-free number is 877-572-4288. Come on, call in. Give us a call. We should be able to answer the question, if not, address it.
All right, let me now go back, Mr. Allen, to the question by our first caller, the young man who formerly lived in the Uptown area. Mr. King attempted to address some aspects of it, though we have on our committee some people that have been involved with both land grant and land trust issues, if you will. One of the problems, as I spoke to at the conclusion of the young man's comments, is that there's a whole legal issue with respect to properties that have basically been foreclosed on, condemned, and et cetera. One of the issues particularly is that who holds the paper, if you will, ownership and et cetera. Even if it's been foreclosed, there must be satisfaction relevant to that property, correct?
Yes.
And so you're looking at a situation in which, first of all, before you can move anybody back into that property, all of that has to be satisfied. So you're talking, and I noticed that Mr. King stayed away from that, you're talking in terms of satisfying, quote-unquote, the legal standing of the financial institution who actually has a first claim. Notice the term, first claim against the property. You also have a situation with respect to the homesteading, if you will.
Yes.
Homesteading is a very important and fundamental American right, if you will, what the standing as it pertains to the homesteading. You also then have the whole issue of reconnection of services, gas, electric, if you will, electricity and et cetera. Those issues must be satisfied, if you will. Will the utility companies agree to roll over costs from a previous facility, if you will, or abode, and allow persons to move in and receive the services that a human being would expect to be able to receive, so to turn the lights on, turn the television on, flush the toilet, and et cetera, right?
Right.
I can well remember a celebrated case here not too long ago of a so-called community activist who got thrown out because he hadn't paid his water bill.
Yes, I remember that.
And the water was shut off, you know.
We have
and
a call.
So these
too.
Are questions that we analyze in good consciousness, if you will, in fairness to what the young man said. And in the though that we're going to have the mayor coming in before the committee this coming week, we assume that the mayor will, and that of course, we've already expressed our concerns to thousands and thousands and thousands of listeners, but we assume that the mayor will bring the appropriate line staff to familiarize us and help us be intelligent.
Yeah. Hey, we have a caller, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, let's get him. Let's get him.
You're live on the air, man. This is calling.
Would that be me? This is Reggie Burks.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Am I on?
Yes, Mr. Burks. What can we do for you?
Okay, yeah. Well, kind of observation and also to get your response to this, if you have some kind of update from your observation in terms of the blacks that are included in these construction jobs that we see all over the town, that comes down, of course, from the Fed all the way down to every local city. Now, I sort of was alerted to the fact when I met some young black guys working temp agency jobs that they got some construction jobs, but, of course, they're paying minimum wage or a little bit above, and then that kind of concerned me, and I wondered, is this a way of responding to that to get more minorities on these jobs? Hey, let's just get these temp agencies involved. We don't have to pay that much when we know they're all $30, $20 an hour jobs. So,
all right, Ms. Burke, let me respond to that question specifically. We have made reference for months to the very celebrated disparity study.
Yeah.
That was done and published in October of 2010. Ironically, first of all, African Americans do not get significant or, if any, employment on construction or contracts or et cetera. It's interesting that you raised the question about compensation because one of the things that the report says and also a similar report done by the Institute on Economic Development in Washington, D.C. in April of last year, African Americans, even when they work, and this is scandalous, and Mr. Allen and I have been hammering at this ever since it came out, African Americans are paid 40% less than their white counterparts. In fact, we're paid less.
Even if they were like a direct hire, you're saying it doesn't have to be a temp service job.
We're talking about direct hires. We're talking about
yeah,
men and women who are shown as being employees on the site, yet they are still paid as much as 40% less than their white counterparts. Okay. On the issue of contracts, in the disparity study, there is a multiplicity of categories, if you will. let's say there are 90 categories, and basically 80 of the 90 categories for African Americans show 0.00. Okay, so I don't know what these folks are talking about when they talk in terms of jobs and opportunities for African Americans, jobs for 150 young black men to work in, et cetera, on the streets of our city. The record and the history shows that it just doesn't happen. But that's why we here at On Point raised the issue to a previous caller that we assume that the keeper of the statutory responsibility, in this case the Civil Rights Department and Velma Corvell, will sit down with our community committee and tell us how they're going to get it done.
Right. I was just wondering if this was like a backdoor attempt, like going through these temp agencies where they pay them slave labor or wages.
Oh, that's always been. I mean, that's clear. That's always been. But it, one of the things that's happened in some rare cases of the labor, the OSHA and others are contacted because, if I'm a contractor and I'm hiring a temp worker, I'm actually in violation of the labor of labor laws, fair practice, and et cetera, because I first and foremost, going through the general contractor, which let's say I was, my obligation with the union is to hire out of the hall. In other words, off the bench. And so I've tried to say for years to folks that when you see this happening and you see brothers out there digging a hole or waving the traffic through, it's already a violation of federal law. It's already a violation of the Davis-Bacon Act and et cetera. But, you know, as long as there's no enforcement and the government has a lot of different places it has to go and deal with, and on some occasions the enforcement agencies will come in and they will deal with you and they will fine you $500,000 or et cetera. But the temp agency game is one that is a clear violation of law.
All right.
Well, thanks a lot. Yep.
Thanks for your call. Mr. Edwards, we have another caller.
Let's get him.
Who am I speaking with? Hello, caller. You're live.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, sir.
How are you doing? Is this Donald?
Yes.
How are you doing?
This is Ronald.
This is Peter.
So what can we do for you?
Yes. How can we help you, sir?
This is Peter from MPLS Tornado Facebook page.
Okay.
Oh, that's right. You've been in a couple meetings with us, Peter. How are you doing? Peter
King,
correct?
Yes.
Okay, out of New York City. Gotcha. Go ahead. What's up?
Yeah. In fact, the question I have is, you know, about one of the meetings you were in, because you raised a very good question. You asked the Hennepin County gentleman. You mentioned that, you know, there was tons of volunteers walking around with clipboards, knocking on doors, taking statistics, but where are these statistics? Where are the reports on the people they were supposedly counting?
Mm-hmm.
So has anyone said anything about that?
Yeah, the census. They took a census last year. Okay, you had people.
Don, 2009, really, and reported last year. Go ahead.
Reported last year, and I mean, you're absolutely right. They had people going from house to house, getting all this detailed information, their names, how many people, how many kids they got, how many fingers and toes. I'm being facetious now. But, yeah, that data is there. And if you understand what's going on here, that body has not gotten one report on anything. Okay? We don't have a report to show how much this contractor made over here, or how much that first payout was and who it went to on June 3rd. We don't even know. I mean, I think you were in that meeting, sir, when I asked, can I see the plan for the Minneapolis Foundation? Okay. I felt that if there's $1 million in the pot, okay, and our people, the people in North Minneapolis, I want to put it like that, need help, you need to ask for the majority of that, and yeah, include those administrative fees, but also have something to take care of those people that need cash grants immediately. Okay?
Right. Let me do this, Peter, and feel free to do it and confront us at the committee, because technically you are a member of the committee once you signed in. The keeper of the information that people are playing like they don't know is a gentleman by the name of Jeff Schneider. Mr. Schneider was the project manager for the census. He is the keeper of all the information. I would suggest that you call the city of Minneapolis, ask for the directory, ask for the telephone number. I'm going to say it again slowly so you can write it down. Mr. Jeff Schneider. Jeff Schneider was the presenter. See, people also didn't realize that when the census report was made to the city council, only Mr. Allen and myself were the only African Americans really in the room in the, for the full city council. I would suggest, Peter, I know you've been doing some groundwork, if you will.
Yes.
Get the telephone number of Jeff Schneider and ask Mr. Schneider to make available to you the information accumulated during the census, which includes the numbers that County Commissioner Mark Steinlein talked about. Mr. Allen, if you remember on the 1st of June, this is before Peter started coming to the meetings, in which it was Commissioner Steinlein who gave, let me say, there are 12,000 African-Americans that have disappeared off now Minneapolis. And I don't know why it is, for the sake of me, why we play this game in the presence of our community like we're seeking information. I repeat his name again, Jeff Schneider. Mr. Schneider, has the information. Jeff Schneider has the information. Get his name from directory, call his office, indicate that you know that he was the project manager for the census in Minneapolis, and you'd like to stop in and you'd like to pick up as much material as can be legally released to you. Okay?
Definitely, we'll do that. Yes, thank you.
All right. Take care, my brother.
Yeah,
all right.
Thank you, sir. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yeah, you know, Don, I can feel the frustration even within us as veteran bloggers and et cetera, because we've been sitting there for a month. I mean, it's a game, man, that's going on. Now, like you said, you're getting these text messages and people are talking about that's not correct and that, et cetera. You know, they should have, on the list as an example, they should have said that when the Star Tribune did the investigative report.
Exactly. No one picked up the phone and called the Star Tribune, you know, when they write something about the group. They will not pick up the phone and say nothing. But
right.
Let us say it, you know, let it be. We put it out. It's factual. Oh, they're like, oh, you guys can't do that. Oh, you're trying to, you work for the Secret Central Intelligence Agency to try to disrupt the black community. I mean, I've heard
Absolutely.
It all the crap, and, you know, so sick of it. But then again, you know, these same usual suspects, you know, are in line to get, like, $230,000 plus and not...
By the way, I understand from one of the quote-unquote members of one of the committees that it's now, that actually what was taken down to the United, to the Greater Minneapolis, or the Minneapolis Foundation, it's now $378,000.
Wow, that's...
$100,000 was to be hid from us on the committee.
Yeah, okay.
That's why, if you remember, and I, you know, this thing about not talking about the names, that's just a bunch of BS. When William English, standing in for the executive director of the United Pillsbury Communities, gave the report because her computer had crashed, you know, Mr. English, when asked specifically by a number of people in there who are professional, Peter Hayden of Turning Point, yourself and others, when he was asked about a copy of the proposal and the budget, because as you were saying to Mr. King, which he didn't, well, you know, Louis didn't want to deal with that,
no.
Is that 80% of the budget that this committee that we're on has signed off on is for administrative cost, admin.
Yes.
Am I correct?
You're correct, if not more.
And I might see anybody call us and say that that is not an accurate description. 80% of, be it the 278 or the 378 or how much ever they're going to get and they've already gotten, is for administrative costs. In fact, I'll tell you what's happened. Two young ladies who are associates of one of the individuals on the committee have already been put to work. They were put to work quite some time ago.
Yeah.
And I think that they will be two of the six, quote-unquote, navigators, which is a modern word for community organizer, that also is going to be hired, as well as one and one-half are administrators. And by the way, I found it interesting, and we'll talk about that at the point that they overstepped themselves, who the proposal writer was for a radio station, KMOJ, after sitting in the meeting and saying that they, and raised their hand, that they would not participate in the writing of a proposal against the interests of this committee.
Yes, and that's going to be a humdinger right there. Well, Mr. Edwards, we got less than 90 seconds left in the show.
Oh, let's wrap it up, Don.
And
we don't even need to deal with what's on the air tomorrow because a lot of it will be about the June 3rd communique. So what do you got?
Well, I'd like to thank everybody for listening to On Point. We'll be back next Saturday at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time. Call a friend. Tell them to tune in. because it will be interesting. Thanks for listening. And Mr. Edwards in Studio A, we're broadcasting live from the McIntosh Studios in downtown Minneapolis, overlooking City Hall. And anything else, Mr. Edwards?
No, that's it. And we'll be updating you on the meeting with the mayor before the committee in the middle of next week. Stay tuned, and thank you for tuning in.
Yep.